The Number Concept, Its Origin and Development, by Levi Leonard Conant, Ph.D. Chapter 1. Counting. Among the speculative questions which arise in connection with the study of arithmetic from a historical standpoint, the origin of number is one that has provoked much lively discussion, and has led to a great amount of learned research among the primitive and savage languages of the human race. A few simple considerations will, however, show that research must necessarily leave this question entirely unsettled, and will indicate clearly that it is, from the very nature of things, a question to which no definite and final answer can be given. Among the barbarous tribes whose languages have been studied, even in a most cursory manner, none have ever been discovered which did not show some familiarity with the number concept. The knowledge thus indicated has often proved to be most limited, not extending beyond the numbers 1 and 2, or 1, 2, and 3. Examples of this poverty of number language are found among the forest tribes of Brazil, the native races of Australia and elsewhere, and they are considered in some detail in the next chapter. At first thought, it seems quite inconceivable that any human being should be destitute of the power of counting beyond 2, but such is the case, and in a few instances, languages have been found to be absolutely destitute of pure numeral words. The Chiquitos of Bolivia have no real numerals, whatever, but express their idea for one by the word itama, meaning alone. The Tacandas of the same country have no numerals except those borrowed from the Spanish, or from Amaya or Pino, languages which they have long been in contact. A few other South American languages are almost equally destitute of numeral words. But even here, rudimentary as the number sense undoubtedly is, it is not wholly lacking. And some indirect expression or some form of circumlocution shows a conception of the difference between 1 and 2, or at least between 1 and many. These facts of necessity deter the mathematician from seeking to push his investigation too far back towards the very origin of number. Philosophers have endeavored to establish certain propositions concerning this subject, but, as might have been expected, have failed to reach any common ground of agreement. Whewell has maintained that such propositions as the 2 and 3 make 5 are necessary truths, containing in them an element of certainty beyond that which mere experience can give. Mill, on the other hand, argues that any such statement merely expresses a truth derived from early and constant experience, and in this view he is heartily supported by Tyler. But why this question should provoke controversy? It is difficult for the mathematician to understand. Either view would seem to be correct, according to the standpoint from which the question is approached. We know of no language in which the suggestion of number does not appear, and we must admit that the words which give expression to the number's sense would be among the early words to be formed in any language. They express ideas which are, at first, wholly concrete, which are the greatest possible simplicity, and which seem in many ways to be clearly understood, even by the higher orders of brute creation. The origin of number would, in itself, then, appear to lie beyond the proper limits of inquiry, and the primitive conception of number to be fundamental with human thought. In connection with the assertion that the idea of number seems to be understood by the higher orders of animals, the following brief quotation from a paper by Sir John Lubbock may not be out of place. Leroy mentions a case in which a man was anxious to shoot a crow. To deceive this suspicious bird, the plan was hit upon of sending 2 men to the watch-house, one of whom passed on while the other remained, but the crow counted and kept her distance. The next day, 3 went, and again she perceived only that 2 retired. In fine, it was found necessary to send 5 or 6 to the watch-house to put her out of her calculation. The crow, thinking that this number of men had passed by, lost no time in returning. From this he inferred that the crows could count up to 4. Lichtenberg mentions a nightingale which was said to count up to 3. Every day he gave it 3 mealworms, 1 at a time. When it had finished 1, it returned for another, but after the 3rd it knew that the feast was over. There is an amusing and suggestive remark in Mr. Galton's interesting Narrative of an Explorer in Tropical South Africa. After describing the Denmark's weakness in calculations, he says, "Once I watched while the Denmark floundering hopelessly in a calculation on one side of me, I observed Dinah, my spaniel, equally embarrassed on the other. She was overlooking a half a dozen of her newborn puppies, which had been removed 2 or 3 times from her, and her anxiety was excessive, as she tried to find out if they were all present, or if any were still missing. She kept puzzling and running her eyes over them backwards and forwards, but could not satisfy herself. She evidently had a vague notion of counting, but the figure was too large for her brain." Taking the two as they stood, Dog and Damara, the comparison reflected no great honor on the man. According to my bird-nesting recollections, which I have refreshed by more recent experience, if a nest contains 4 eggs, 1 may safely be taken, but if 2 are removed, the bird generally deserts. Here, then, it would seem as if we had some reason for supposing that there is sufficient intelligence to distinguish 3 from 4. An interesting consideration arises with a reference to the number of victims allotted to each cell by the solitary wasps. One species of Ammophila considers 1 large caterpillar of Noctem suggetum enough. One species of Eumenis supplies its young with 5 victims, another 10, 15, and even up to 24. The number appears to be constant in each species. How does the insect know when her task is fulfilled? Not by the cell being filled, for if some be removed, she does not replace them. When she has brought her complement, she considers her a task accomplished. Whether the victims are still there or not, how, then, does she know when she has made up the number 24? Perhaps it will be said that each species feels some mysterious and an innate tendency to provide a certain number of victims. This would, under no circumstances, be any explanation, but is not in accordance with the facts. In the genus Eriamenes, the males are much smaller than the females. If the egg is male, she supplies 5, if female, 10. Does she count? Certainly this seems very like a commencement of arithmetic. Many writers do not agree with the conclusions which Lubbock reaches, maintaining that there is, in all such instances, a perception of greater or lesser quantity rather than any idea of number. But a careful consideration of the objects offered fails entirely to weaken the argument. Example after example of a nature similar to those just quoted might be given, indicating on the part of animals a perception of the difference between 1 and 2, or between 2, 3, and 4, and any reasoning which tends to show that it is quantity rather than number which the animal perceives will apply with equal force to the Damara and the Chiquito and the Australian. Hence the actual origin of number may safely be excluded from the limits of investigation, and for the present be left in the field of pure speculation. A most inviting field for research is, however, furnished by the primitive methods of counting and of giving visible expression to the idea of number. Our starting point must, of course, be the sign language, which always precedes intelligible speech, and which is so convenient and so expressive a method of communication that the human family, even in its most highly developed branches, never wholly lays it aside. It may indeed be stated as a universal law that some practical method of numeration has, in the childhood of every nation or tribe, preceded the formation of numeral words. Practical methods of numeration are many in number and diverse in kind. But the one primitive method of counting which seems to have been almost universal throughout all time is the finger method. It is a matter of common experience and observation that every child, when he begins to count, turns instinctively to his fingers, and with these convenient aids as counters, tallies off the little number he has in mind. This method at once is so natural and obvious that there can be no doubt that it had always been employed by savage tribes. Since the first appearance of the human race in remote antiquity, all research among uncivilized peoples has tended to confirm this view. Were confirmation needed of anything so patent, occasionally some exception to this rule is found, or some variation, such as is presented by the forest tribes of Brazil, who instead of counting on their fingers themselves, count the joints of their fingers. As the entire number system of these tribes appears to be limited to 3, this variation is no cause for surprise. The variety in practical methods of numeration observed among savage races and among civilized peoples as well is so great that any detailed account of them would be almost impossible. In one region, we'd find sticks or splints used. In another, pebbles or shells. In another, simple scratches or notches cut in a stick, Robinson Crusoe fashion. In another, kernels or little heaps of grain. In another, knots on a string, and so on, in diversity of method almost endless. Such are the devices which have been, and still are, to be found in the daily habit of great numbers of Indian, Negro, Mongolian, and Malay tribes, while to pass at a single step into the other extremity of intellectual development, the German student keeps his beer score by chalk marks on the table or on the wall. But back of all these devices, and forming a common origin to which they all may be referred, is the universal finger method, the method to which it all began, and which all find too convenient ever to relinquish entirely, even though their civilization be of the highest type. Any such mode of counting, whether involving the use of fingers or not, is to be regarded simply as extraneous aid in the expression or comprehension of an idea which the mind cannot grasp or cannot retain without assistance. The German student scores his reckoning with chalk marks because he might otherwise forget, while the Andaman Islander counts on his fingers because he has no other method of counting, or, in other words, of grasping the idea of a number. A single illustration may be given which typifies all practical methods of numeration. More than a century ago, travelers in Madagascar observed a curious but simple mode of ascertaining the number of soldiers in an army. Each soldier was made to go through a passage in the presence of the principal chiefs, and as he went through, a pebble was dropped on the ground. This continued until a heap of 10 was obtained. When one was set aside and a new heap began, upon the completion of 10 heaps, a pebble was set aside to indicate 100, and so on until the entire army had been numbered. Another illustration, taken from the very antipodes of Madagascar, recently found its way into print from an incidental manner, and is so good that it deserves a place besides the Flacourt's time-honored Mom Jelly. A southern Negro of an unknown age finds herself in debt to the storekeeper, and, unwilling to believe that the amount is as great as he represents, she proceeds to investigate the matter in her own peculiar way. She had kept a tally of these purchases by means of a string which she tied commemorative knots. When her creditor undertook to make the matter clear to Chelli's comprehension, he had to proceed upon a system of her own devising. A small notch was cut in a smooth white stick for every dime she owned, and a large knot was one when the dimes had combined into a dollar. For every $5, a string was tied in the fifth notch. Chelli, keeping tally by the knots in her bit of twine, thus, when two strings were tied about the stick, the $10 were seen to be an indisputable fact. This interesting method of computing of the amount of her debt, whether an invention of her own or survival of the African life of her parents, served the old Negro woman's purpose perfectly. And it illustrates, as well as a score of examples could, the methods of numeration to which the children of barbarism resort when any number is to be expressed which exceeds the number of counters with which nature has provided them. The fingers are, however, often employed in counting numbers far above the first decade. After giving the il igob numbers to 60, Mueller adds, above 60 all numbers indicated by the proper figure pantomime are expressed by means of the word ipi. We know, moreover, that many of the American Indian tribes count 110 after another on their fingers, so that, whatever the number they are endeavoring to indicate, we need feel no surprise if the savage continues to use his fingers throughout the entire extent of his counts. In rare instances we find tribes which, like the Marasses of an interior New Guinea, appear to use nothing but finger pantomime. This tribe, though by no means destitute of the number sense, is said to have no numerals whatsoever, but to use the single word awari with the show of each fingers, no matter how few or how many are displayed. In the methods of finger counting employed by savages, a considerable degree of uniformity has been observed. Not only does he use his finger to assist him in his tally, but he almost always begins with the little finger of his left hand, thence proceeding towards the thumb, which is 5. From this point onward, the method varies. Sometimes the second 5 is told off the left hand, the same order being observed as in the first. But oftener, the fingers of the right hand are used with the reversal of the order previously employed, i.e., the thumb denotes 6, the index finger 7, and so on to the little finger, which completes the count to 10. At first thought, there would seem to be no good reason for any marked uniformity of finger method in counting. Observation among children fails to detect any such thing, the child beginning with almost entire indifference on the thumb or little finger of the left hand. My own observation leads to the conclusion that very young children have a slight, though not decided, preference for beginning with the thumb. Experiments in 5 different primary rooms in the public schools of Worcester, Mass., show that out of a total of 206 children, 57 began with the little finger and 149 with the thumb. But the fact that nearly 3/4 of the children began with the thumb and 1/4 with the little finger is really far less significant than would appear at first thought. Children of this age, 4 to 8 years, will count in either way, and sometimes seem at a loss themselves to know where to begin. In one schoolroom where this experiment was tried, the teacher incautiously asked one child to count on his fingers, while all the other children in the room watched eagerly to see what he would do. He began with the little finger, and so did every child in the room after him. In another case, the same error was made by the teacher, and the child first asked began with the thumb. Every other child in the room did the same, each following, consciously or unconsciously, the example of the leader. The results from these two schools were, of course, rejected from the totals which were given above, but they serve an excellent purpose in showing how slight the preference which very young children have in this particular. So slight is it that no definite law can be postulated of this age, but the tendency seems to be hold the palm of the hand downward and then begin with the thumb. The writer once saw a boy about 7 years old trying to multiply 3 by 6, and his method of procedure was as follows. Holding his left hand with its palm down, he touched with the forefinger of his right hand the thumb, forefinger and middle finger successively of his left hand, then returning to the starting point, he told off a second 3 in the same manner. This process he continued until he had at least obtained 6 threes. And then he announced his result correctly. If he had been a few years older, he might not have turned so readily to his thumb as a starting point for any digital count. The indifference manifested by very young children gradually disappears, and at the age of 12 or 13 the tendency is decidedly in the direction of beginning with the little finger. Fully 3/4 of all persons above that age will be found to count from the little finger towards the thumb, thus reversing the proportion that was found to obtain in the primary school rooms examined. With respect to finger counting among civilized peoples, we fail, then, to find any universal law. The most that can be said is the more begin with the little finger than with the thumb. But when we proceed to the study of this slight but important particular among savages, we find them employing a certain order of succession with substantial uniformity that the conclusion is inevitable that there must lie back of this some well-defined reason, or perhaps instinct, which guides them in their choice. This instinct is undoubtedly the outgrowth of the most universal right-handedness of the human race. In finger counting, whether among children or adults, the beginning is made of the left hand, except in the case of left-handed individuals, and even then the start is almost as likely on the left hand as on the right. Savage tribes, as might be expected, begin with the left hand. Not only is this custom almost invariable, when tribes as a whole are considered, but the little finger is always called into requisition first. To account for this uniformity, Lieutenant Gushing gives the following theory, which is well considered, and is based on the results of a careful study and observation among the Zuni Indians of the Southwest. Primitive man, when abroad, never lightly quit hold of his weapons, if he wanted to count. He did, as the Zuni field does today, he tucked his instrument under his left arm, thus constraining the latter, but leaving the right hand free, that he might chuck off with it the fingers of the rigidly elevated left hand. From the nature of this position, however, the palm of the left hand was presented to the face of the counter, so that he had to begin his score on the little finger of it and continue his counting from the right leftward. An inheritance of this may be detected today in the confirmed habit the Zuni has of gesticulating from the right leftward, with the fingers of the right hand over those of the left. Whether he be counting and summing up, or relating in any orderly manner, here then is the reason for this otherwise unaccountable phenomenon. If savage man is universally right-handed, he will almost inevitably use the index finger of his right hand to mark the fingers counted, and he will begin his just count just where it's most convenient. In his case, it is with the little finger of the left hand. In the case of the child trying to multiply 3 by 6, it was with the thumb of the same hand. He had nothing to tuck under his arm, so in raising his left hand to a position where both eye and counting finger could readily run over his fingers, he held the palm turned away from his face. The same choice of a starting point then followed as with the savage, the finger nearest of his right hand, only in this case the finger was the thumb. The deaf-mute sometimes is taught in this manner, which is for him an entirely natural manner. The left-handed child might be expected to count from a left-right manner, beginning probably with the thumb of his right hand. To the law just given, that savages begin to count on the little finger of the left hand, there have been a few exceptions noted, and it has been observed that the method of progression on the second hand is by no means as invariable as on the first. The Atomics of South America begin their count with the thumb, and to express the number 3 would use the thumb, forefinger, and middle finger. The Mapures, oddly enough, seem to have begun, in some cases at least, with the forefinger, for they are reported expressing 3 by means of the 4 middle and ring fingers. The Andamans begin with the little finger of each hand, tapping the nose with each finger in succession. If they have but one to express, they use the forefinger of either hand, pronouncing at the same time the proper word. The Banars, one of the native tribes of the interior of Cochin China, exhibit no particular order in the sequences of fingers used, though they employ the digits freely to assist them in counting. Among certain of the Negro tribes of South Africa, the little finger of the right hand is used for 1, and the count proceeds from right to left. With them, 6 is the thumb of the left hand, 7 the forefinger, and so on. They hold the palm downward instead of upward, and thus form a complete and striking exception to the law which has been found to obtain with such substantial uniformity in other parts of the uncivilized world. In Melanesia, a few examples of preference for beginning with the thumb may also be noticed. In the Banks Islands, the natives begin by turning down the thumb of the right hand, and then the fingers in succession to the little finger, which is 5. This is followed by the fingers of the left hand, both hands with closed fists being held up to show the completed 10. In Leper's Island, they begin with the thumb, but having reached 5 with the little finger, they do not pass to the other hand, but throw up the fingers they have turned down, beginning with the forefinger, and keeping the thumb for 10. In the use of the single hand, this people is quite peculiar. The second 5 is invariably told off by savage tribes on the second hand, though in passing from the one to the other, primitive man does not follow any invariable law. He marks 6 with either the thumb or the little finger. Probably the former is the more common practice, but the statement cannot be made with any degree of certainty. Among the Zulus, the sequence is from thumb to thumb, as is the case among the other South African tribes just mentioned, while the Vais and numerous other African tribes pass from thumb to little finger. The Eskimo and nearly all the American Indian tribes use this correspondence between 6 and the thumb. But this habit is by no means universal. Respecting progression from right to left, or left to right on the toes, there is no general law which the author is familiar. Many tribes never use the toes in counting, but signify the close of the first 10 by clapping the hands together, by a wave of the right hand, or by designating some object, after which the fingers are again used as before. One other detail in finger counting is worthy of a moment's notice. It seems to have been the opinion of the earlier investigators that in his passage from one finger to the next, the savage would invariably bend down or close the last finger used. That is, the count began with several fingers open and outspread. This opinion is, however, erroneous. Several of the Indian tribes of the West begin with the hand clenched and open the fingers one by one as they proceed. This method is much less common than the other, but that it exists is beyond question. In the Murilug Island, in the western part of the Torres Strait, a somewhat remarkable method of counting formerly existed, which grew out of and is to be regarded as an extension of the digital method. Beginning with the little finger on the left hand, the natives counted up to 5 in the usual manner, and then, instead of passing to the other hand or repeating the count on the same figures, they expressed the numbers from 6 to 10 by touching and naming successively the left wrist, left elbow, left shoulder, left breast and sternum. Then the numbers from 11 to 19 were indicated by the use, in inverse order, of the corresponding portions of the right side, arm and hand, the little finger of the right hand signifying 19. The words used were in each case the actual names of the parts touched, the same word, for example, standing for 6 and 14. But they were never used in the numerical sense unless accompanied by the proper gesture, and bear no resemblance to the common numerals, which are but few in number. This method of counting is rapidly dying out among the natives of the island, and is at the present time only used by the old people. Variations on this most unusual custom have been found to exist in others of neighboring islands, but none were exactly similar to it. One is also reminded of it by a custom which has for centuries prevailed among the bargainers of the East, of signifying numbers by touching the joints of each other's fingers under a cloth. Every joint has a special signification, and the entire system is undoubtedly a development from finger counting. The buyer or seller will by this method express 6 or 60 by stretching out the thumb and little finger and closing the rest of the fingers. The addition of the fourth finger to the 2 thus used signifies 7 or 70, and so on. It is said that between 2 brokers settling a price by thus snipping with the fingers, cleverness in bargaining, offering a little more, hesitating, expressing an obstinate refusal to go further, etc., are as clearly indicated as through the bargaining were being carried on in words. The place occupied in the intellectual development of man by finger counting and by the many other artificial methods of reckoning, pebbles, shells, knots, the abacus, etc., seems to be this. The abstract processes of addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and even counting itself present to the mind a certain degree of difficulty. To assist in overcoming that difficulty, these artificial aids are called in, and among savages of a low degree of development, like the Australians, they make counting possible. A little higher in the intellectual scale, among the American Indians, for example, they are employed merely as an artificial aid to what would be done by mental effort alone. Finally, among semi-civilized and civilized peoples, the same processes are retained and form a part of the daily life of almost every person who has to do with counting, reckoning, or keeping tally in any manner whatsoever. There are no longer necessary, but they are so convenient and so useful that civilization can never dispense with them. The use of the abacus, in the form of the ordinary numeral frame, has increased greatly within the past few years, and the time may come when the abacus in its proper form will again find civilized country a use as common as that of 5 centuries to go. In the elaborate calculating machines of the present, such are used by life insurance actuaries and others having difficult computations to make. We have the extreme of development in the direction of artificial aid to reckoning, but instead of appearing merely as extraneous aid to a defective intelligence, it now presents itself as a machine so complex that a high degree of an intellectual power is required for the mere grasp of its construction and method of working. End of chapter 1. Read by David Russell. For Lit2Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.